bit of a hard act to follow. Yeah, I love that picture, the Christ Ensemble when making music. Might be jazz, might be some other form of music or a mix of styles and genres, but certainly is an image that I think sits with me strongly as to what it means to be a community of Christ followers trying to figure this loving God and loving neighbour and following Jesus stuff out together. So I this morning just want to offer a few reflections on the text that's been read. Thank you, Mike, for reminding us that steak or, you know, rib steak and broccoli are important in their own way. It is a paraphrase. It doesn't capture some of the nuance of the, you know, the dynamic translations. But there's a few ideas in there that I want to explore. And I'd like to start with a little story. Back in my mid-20s, when I was part of a church community in Auckland, an issue came up in the church life that was quite contentious. It was a conservative, charismatic church. And in the church, women traditionally hadn't been involved as elders, or not many of them were. And there was an influx of young Christians into, or younger Christians into the life of the church, including some people like myself. I'd only been on the Jesus journey for a short, few short years and been largely nurtured within conservative communities for those years. So my settings in relation to the question of the role of women within church and society and even home, having been influenced by that social osmosis, if you like, by living in places and being part of communities that have particular views, were quite conservative myself. If you like, I was part of the patriarchy. Did I hear an intake of breath? And largely because of my story, largely because of the spaces and communities and families that I'd been a part of. So in this church, when this happened, there were some people, including myself, who sought conversation with the leadership around, you know, what was going on. And there was discussion about Bible verses and discussion about theology. And there was an airing of opinions and thoughts and an asking of questions. And the senior pastor very graciously opened up spaces for conversation for people and for airing of some of this. And by and large, it was conducted in a pretty courteous fashion, but there was certainly at times some heat in those conversations. There was a bit of contention. It was, you know, and people were highly invested in their views. And I was pretty invested in mine. I hadn't had the opportunity to explore and tease out that I subsequently had some of these things, but this was a experience that moved me towards wanting to engage with the questions that stood around this and understand the perspectives of others better. But in the end, this church community made a decision that women would continue to be embraced in all aspects of the church's life and eldership and pastoral leadership and every other way. And those who sat in a different space were warmly welcome to continue the journey and to be a part of the church's life. And if they had questions, to engage with those with pastoral staff or others in leadership and to continue the journey together. And if for some reason it became a bridge too far for them and they felt that they couldn't continue, that the church would help them to find a place where they could land, a place that could be home for them. And I thought that was a really important experience, both for me and many others, in the context of learning how to be in a space of disagreement. Because the reality is that individual Christians in all churches find themselves disagreeing over certain things. And often they are things that are very important, at least in the minds of the people engaged in the dispute or the disagreement. And they have to navigate, we have to navigate relationships and communal life where we acknowledge the fact that there are differences and find a way of being together that promotes the primary ethic of love in our midst. So in this story that we read this morning, which was read by Mike, the church in Rome found itself in having to acknowledge the difference of the backgrounds that people came from and the different beliefs and practices that they had as a consequence of those stories and those backgrounds and those, if you like, religious beliefs that they had imbibed over time and their social practices. It wasn't just a question of diet. It was much more substantive than that to these people. It wasn't just, oh, look, I'm a vegetarian and you're a meat eater and we've got to learn to live together. And if we have a shared meal and it's at the vegetarian home, then we'll all just bring something from the Ministry of Salads. But if we eat it at a meatheader's home, we'll contact Mission Scopes and see what they've got in the fridge or the freezer. You know, it wasn't kind of this kind of an issue. It was much more substantive, and the emotional investment and, if you like, spiritual investment from people in the issue was much stronger. Because for people in this culture and in this time, the food that they would purchase from the market, especially in Rome, was nearly all of it had been offered to some god and some idol representing a god. And so the conscience of some young believers with respect to this and others was stirred, because they thought, well, in eating this food, am I showing my allegiance to these gods? Does that mean that I'm being unfaithful to the Christian story, unfaithful to God as revealed in Christ, by taking food that has been offered in allegiance to some other version or some other standing of God or gods? And so those who were choosing not to purchase and eat this meat and going vegetarian were doing so out of that place, not simply because it was a dietary decision, I'll be healthier if I eat the vegetables. And in turn, those who were saying we can eat all kinds of foods, including foods offered to idols, were saying, well, Jesus in his teaching declared all food clean. Not only the food that we deem to be kosher, that from our Mosaic laws, but all other foods. And so they, if you like, felt there was a freedom to eat all kinds of foods and not to have to adhere to either Mosaic laws or other constraints. So that was one issue in the life of this community that was a very substantive issue. It wasn't just superficial, you know, what you eat is your choice. It was, there's some deep things here related to journeying in faith that we need to consider. And both parties could refer to scriptures in support of the views that they took, in support of their beliefs and practice. And if you like, find a text to back it up. You hear that phrase? Well, more than one text to back up the view and the behavior. And then the same is true in this text. There was, Paul goes on and he says, I'm reading here from the New Living Translation, the same way some think one day is more holy than another day, while others think every day is alike. And there was contention over what days would be set aside as feast days or holy days. When do we gather for worship? What days should I practice fasting and make space for reflection and stop working? Because in the Mosaic law, all the feasts were stipulated and the Sabbath day was stipulated as well. So again, this just wasn't, oh, you know, it's just choose what day you like. It was, there are some deeply ingrained customs and habits and understanding of how to live out faith, especially by those who were Jewish people, that we feel we need to hold on to. And our scriptures tell us that we should hold on to them. And then the others are saying, well, no, Jesus has, in his teaching, has given us an indication that we don't need to hold on to these in the same way that God is Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath has been made for us, not us for the Sabbath. And this kind of stretching out of understanding of what they understood these days the place they should have in their lives together. So you can imagine the arguments. You can imagine perhaps the heat in some of the conversations and the dispute. And you can imagine how upsetting and how disorientating it was for those who had stood in a certain place for many, many years on an issue to find that others were saying, no, there's a different way of being in this. And then others saying, well, what's the point? Why are you so invested in this? So lots of points of difference, lots of tension going on here. And N.T. Wright says that the issues here around holy days and earlier in this gospel about circumcision and types of food to eat, he says they weren't first-order theological or moral issues, but second-order cultural and ethnic issues. Now, I kind of think, dare I, that N.T. Wright hasn't quite caught the picture of what is going on there. Who am I to question such a scholar? But there are a number of others who point out, as I've sought to this morning, that these are not merely ethical or cultural issues. These are deeply ingrained matters of faith that these people have differences about and have to find a way of navigating their way together in life and resolve in some way, shape or form. So I don't think these matters can simply be dismissed as secondary ethnic and cultural matters. They're clearly much more substantive and important to that. And people on both sides of the issues have been able to support the views and practices that they take, utilising the sacred scriptures and all the teaching of Jesus to support the places that they've landed on and the lives that they live. It's complicated. It's complicated. I'm wondering, as you think of this issue in your life in Christian churches, where you might have encountered a situation where an issue of substance has been a point of difference and potential division amongst people in churches. I can think of many, but just have a little conversation where you are. Do in your experience in church life, both by observing it or by being a participant, where have you encountered Christians struggling to actually find a way of journeying together? Because there's points of difference about belief and practice that have made it difficult. Have a chat about it, just for a wee minute. Thanks for participating in that, in those buzzy little groups there. I just wonder if anybody wants to identify from your story, your world, an experience, perhaps an issue or something that was of this kind of nature that we're looking at, a matter where there was difference and then disagreement and perhaps conflict and perhaps not a particularly healthy way of resolving it, or maybe there was a pathway forward found. Helen. Yeah. Dancing? Playing cards? Oh, yeah. Reading Harry Potter? Yeah. How is it? So, yeah, okay. Sarah. Okay. Was this over drums and organs and guitars and piano? any musical instrument. Yeah, that's right. There was somebody who just said, no, you can't have it. Yeah. What about others? And these are hugely substantive issues that we're touching on right now. Just... at least in some people's minds, you know, the emotional investment in belief and practice around these things is often huge. Oh, the life of Brian, yeah, that was another one. Do you watch it or don't you watch it? Yeah, which is a broader one about, you know. Alan, you were going to say something. Communion classes. So tell us more about that one. That one's escaped me. Oh, okay. Okay. Ah, yes. Yep. Yes. Where's it stored? Yes. Yeah, we had a conversation about that. Yeah, and whether or not it's alcoholic or non-alcoholic and all the questions around that. Yep. Andrew. Puppets in church. I missed that one. Wow. Margaret. Get engaged or fail to engage with issues in a way that somehow managed to do it in the river of grace. Navigating our differences in the river of grace is how we've been framing this up. So I just want to pull a couple of things out of this text that Paul suggests are important when we have these kinds of situations. We're navigating our way in life at the moment around how we lovingly embrace our queer kin in our life together and in our wider engagement with the world in terms of our commitment to love the world that God has placed us in. And for people coming from all kinds of different backgrounds with different understandings and beliefs and feelings about this, there's a sense in which it can be a difficult conversation to have. We'd like to think that wasn't the case, you know, but that isn't the reality that we inhabit. So we have to think about how we go about loving one another in the midst of our differences. So some of the advice that Paul gives, which I just want to refer to, is before in writing this letter to this particular community, Paul says, owe nothing to anyone except your obligation to love one another. And he puts this love of neighbour right at the heart of things. And he's reflecting the heart and the teaching and the embodied living of Jesus in pointing this out as the priority. He's saying, be guided by the embodied teaching of Jesus in your approach to matters of difference and even substantive difference. And he points that command, love your neighbour as yourself, an echo, yes, of Torah, law, but something that Jesus has highlighted is that which must be the preeminent ethic within the Christian community. And if you go through the New Testament letters, you'll find that this is what is put at the heart of things. So we're navigating differences and shaping practices. He's saying, make this your focus. I had an experience, I think I may have mentioned this once before, so bear with me if you've heard me talk about this. But a couple of years, it was actually during the pandemic, I pulled out some of the personal papers that my mum and dad had left after their passing and that I was the custodian of on behalf of the family. And I started digging through some things and I found some letters that I wrote to my mum and my dad when I was 19, 20 years old and had a really significant series of events happen in my life that brought me to a new place of faith in Christ. And I then became involved in Christian communities that were quite conservative in many ways, and there was also in some of those communities a view of the Roman Catholic Church that I had been raised up in, which was very very critical and suspicious, and basically wrote them off as not even being Christian. So I was starting to imbibe some of that understanding in this environment, whilst the steps that I had taken in my personal life of renewed connection to God and Christ were very strong and meaningful, as also being influenced by this. So this was in my letters to my devoted Catholic mum and dad. And when I started reading these letters, I felt a sense of horror at what I'd wrote. I thought, That is horrendous. That is so judgy. That is so arrogant. That is so lacking in any sense of humility and understanding and empathy. And it made me appreciate in a renewed way why that was such a conflicted period of relationship with my mum and dad. And all of my if you like, perception was it's their fault because they're not following Jesus. They don't know the gospel and they need to find it. But then I found something else going on inside me. I felt this sense of anger towards my former self. And I started speaking to myself in punitive and harsh and cruel ways. Sean, you what a dick. Why the hell did you speak to your parents like that? And I engaged in this inner dialogue that was very hateful and it was very cruel. In fact, it was a reflection of what I had been doing in the letter so long ago. That was still in me, but it was now directed towards myself. And I distinctly remember while this was happening and feeling this anger and this disappointment and this kind of bewilderment sitting inside me, words forming in my mind. And these words were, Sean, you need to love your former selves. Sean, you need to love your former selves. And they came penetrating into the midst of this inner dialogue in a really strong way. And I had to step back and say, okay, what's going on here? The sense that I had was that Wairuatapu, the Spirit of God, was wanting me to know that, first of all, I was who I was in that stage of my life. Significantly, just because of the story that I'd lived in and the people who were a part of my life. And whilst there were things definitely that were wrong about it, there was a sense in which I was shaped by those things, and I needed to love that person that I had been, as with many other stages in my journey, and now the current one, with all of the imperfections and shortcomings that are a part of this stage of the journey. But then I had another thought that came to me that I found to be really important, and that was the thought, Sean, if you don't love your former selves, you will not love the people you meet today who represent those former selves. And I realized that this was not only a lesson for me about self-love and how that's deeply connected to neighbor love, but it was a lesson for me as a pastor. If I find myself in that reactionary place, then I can't connect meaningfully and lovingly with those who I encounter who sit in a different place with me today. So this call to love neighbor as self is intimately woven together and is central and critical to how we do this journey. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago a book that I've been reading by Britt Barron. And she was a speaker at the Awaken Conference a few weeks ago that some of us went to. And Britt identifies something that she calls, I'll just have a look here in my notes. Progressive amnesia. Progressive amnesia. And she says it's very easy if you have traveled to a different place in your belief and practice that feels more spacious, that feels more generous, to forget how the journey has been to get to where you are. And as a result of that, you can become disdainful and contemptuous and very judgy towards the people who sit in those different spaces to which you once sat in. And she encourages those who feel like they've moved towards a more generous space. You know, those who say, you know, all food, we don't have to stick to eating just the veggies, all foods are clean. Those who say we don't have to get fixated on certain days, but there's more room. To those who maybe have moved to a different place in terms of understanding sexuality and gender and relationships. She's saying you need to remember if you have moved what that journey has been like and how you were in those places and how difficult growth often is and how each stage of life we need compassion along the way. Because when that happens, we create a space where we can do the journey together whilst holding on to love. Paul here gives a lot of other pointers towards things that are helpful when seeking to navigate differences in the river of grace. But that's right at the heart of it. That's right at the heart of it. He says, do nothing to anyone except your obligation to love one another. If you love your neighbor, you will fulfill the requirements of God's call or God's law. These are summed up in this one commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to others. So love fulfills this requirement of God's call, God's law, God's invitation. So I just kind of want to put that out there and open up the bar stool for others who may have reflections or questions or perhaps an alternative perspective on this. We can't capture every nuance of what this means in a single conversation, but I think this call to focus on this love at the center of the journey is critical for us as a people as we continue our journey as well. So bar stool's open. Please be brief and please be honest. If you have something in relation to what's been shared or something else on your heart you'd like to share, please come.